Welcome to the Susan Murphy Milano Show. Time's Up, produced and broadcast on the Zeus Radio Network for Hear Women Talk.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Susan Murphy Milano. Thank you for joining us on Time's Up. And with me across the table every week, who straightens my rear end out when I do or say something wrong, is Delilah from ImaginePublicity.com.
I had that much power.
You do. Wow. And she's also the creator of the blog for crime survivors, Time's Up. blog.blogspot.com. And we're doing something different this week. We have a unique show for the hour. You know, we see so many of these cases, from Drew Peterson to Sean Paniers to Jackie Waller's husband. I try not to remember the guys' names. I just try to remember the women's names. But we don't know much about them, and we don't really talk much about how much do we really know about abusers.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's something that I think you're finding out across the country as far as discussions we've had about intakes when they...
We've had a hell of a week. If people would come and do my intakes and my trainings, we wouldn't be talking about these situations.
No.
We would know who the offenders are, and that is part of the problem, as we saw in this hellish case yesterday when I almost jumped out of my skin with a woman who had a lot of situations going on in her life, a victim of violence, but also they were trying to sell her 8-year-old daughter. Mm-hmm. And I didn't understand why the feds weren't in there. Hopefully they are now after my blog yesterday. But, again, you know, this is so important about the abuser. So today's discussion is going to focus on two amazing professionals who really deal with batter intervention, prevention, anger management, how much about a perpetrator and his history or mental health, addiction, are part of the overall picture and risk. And we've had Sandra on quite a bit talking about pathologies and my favorite dickless wonders across the country who, you know, we wonder if they're taking Viagra because, you know, they just go around keep doing what they're doing. The discussion today...
Because they can. Being stopped properly.
That's right. But we're also joined by Dr. David Clark. He is with the Atlanta Intervention Network. And Dr. Clark has a doctoral in pastoral counseling. He's a nationally certified MAC addiction counselor and provides training and supervision for individuals seeking to be certified in family violence intervention programs, addiction treatment. He's been a minister of the local church, a chaplain, and for most of over 20 years has provided intervention classes for domestic violence and alcohol substance abuse at both levels, 1, 2. He's certified as a criminal justice professional, and he performs evaluations for the U.S. Department of Transportation. And Sandra is no stranger. She is the CEO of the Institute for Relational Harm and Public Pathology and Education. I told you to need to shorten up that name. But she is also the author of Women Who Love Psychopaths and one of my other favorite books, How to Spot a Dangerous Man. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
You know, this was an interesting way that this show came about, was because the two of you had met at a class in Atlanta at a training. And Dr. Clark, you wanted to know who snuck Sandra Brown in the door.
Well, I don't know if it was him that somebody said it in the class.
That's right.
No, it was me.
Was it you?
Why is this type of training for pathology and aggressive behavior? Why was this so unique to you that day?
Well, in listening to reactions from different people who were there in terms of actually in the class, and what I had already been taught about how we were to do this program, it's my understanding that some of them viewed it as too clinical. And by that, meaning that we're going to have to know whether or not somebody is in some form pathological. And in general, they prefer that we do not do that. In other words, when we do, they're even cautious about using the term evaluation because it implies even being clinical. I think one analogy that would help for me to give would be when you think of racism, nobody thinks that somebody needs counseling because they're a racist. You know, that this is something that is society-based and needs to be changed, but not through counseling.
Dr. Clark, when you say they, who are you speaking of?
I was about to clarify that.
Oh, thank you.
I'm in the state of Georgia, and the organization that monitors what we do is called the Georgia Commission on Family Violence. And when we started these, when the state took it over in 2003, they made it very clear that they do not want us to be clinical. This is a psychoeducational model, and that's the reason that I'm saying about the racism, that they don't accept that there are psychological reasons for this. It's more of, in this case, patriarchy. And so they're preferring that we do not use clinical language in general.
Sandra Brown, jump in here real quick.
The training is the same.
Yeah, that just scares the holy hell out of me. So here we have, people that have profound, the most dangerous people on the planet, you know, with pathological disorders that very often have really low treatment outcomes, and then we have programs that don't want to look at those risk factors. How in the world are we protecting victims when we're not even identifying what we already know are the highest risk factors, which have to do with a handful of mental health disorders, and sometimes, you know, weave in a little addiction there.
And I think, you know, you, Dr. Clark, you have a unique background to this, because how often do I see people, except for maybe Neil Shorey out of Illinois, as far as pastoral backgrounds? And I think that lends into your openness to not follow what everybody else is doing and looking at what works. Is that true?
Yes. Yeah, we've tried to focus some on the clinical. In other words, I provide a training about monthly that the Georgia Commission has supported, and I don't do it as clinical as Sandra did it the other day, but I do try to include that kind of information in the training that we do. I guess the main point that I'm saying is that their perception is that that's not the problem. That it has more to do with this men who are patriarchal.
Not, yeah, right. Mental health has nothing to do with it. It's just that old Duluth model of the power and control wheel.
And boy, that got Linda Yancey killed in 2009. Her husband Derek happened to be a sheriff with Cobb County, I believe it was, and he had come up with some story that a day laborer had come in. He shot both the day laborer, who really had no connections to family, and his wife, who wanted out of the relationship. So, or we also have Sam Parker, whose body, Teresa, was just discovered last year. He also, by trade, happened to be a sheriff, again, I believe in Cobb County, and he was a sergeant. And he is in prison for the rest of his life for the murder of his wife. You know, I'd like to take both of these guys who are both in prison right now. That's a hell of a study to do. Maybe we could look at those things, because their behavior, their mental fitness or lack thereof, is why these women died. And I go towards what works out in the field. And so this is refreshing for me, but it's also frustrating, because those models that they teach or they subscribe to in Georgia, we can't ask Linda Yancey, people like her. We can't ask Teresa Parker, who, by the way, you know, she was a 911 operator. Again, she just wanted a divorce. Both of these men fit so many of what you both teach, Sandra and Dr. Clark, that if they started to look at real cases in real lives instead of looking at it like it's just textbook, and I think that's where the rub comes. Wouldn't you agree, Dr. Clark?
Yes, and one of the points that I've heard some of the folks make is that all of this is a part of a community response, and that the family violence intervention courses are one part of that.
And they're, you know, most of the part, they're not effective. I was going to use not a good word, but they are not effective as far as really dealing with this because, no, first of all, and this is what I've done for over 20 years, and I did it when I had the agency, Project Protect back in Illinois, and we got more intake on the offender because I wanted to know who I was up against. I wanted to know his mental health, whether he was on drugs. Mm-hmm. I wanted to know what his pattern was of conduct, of behavior prior to the relationship, at the relationship, and then after the relationship. That is what saved women from not dying. And I can still say this to this day, that since I've been doing this for over 20 years, not one woman has died based on a different methodology that doesn't go towards treatment, but it goes towards a solution that keeps them alive. And I think that
it goes towards knowledge. If these models are not allowing the knowledge of the perpetrators to come into play and give a complete picture of the situation, then, you know, how are they being treated? How is the solution?
Sandra, why don't we answer this? We got to take a break. We got to pay the sponsors. Okay. So we're talking, everybody, with Dr. David Clark from the Atlanta Intervention Network and Sandra Brown, author of Women Who Love Psychopaths and also the creator of SafeRelationshipsMagazine.com. Stay with us, everybody.
Stop seeing you that way. And I look around and you're not there. I love that you're gone.
Social media is all about the buzz, and now is your chance to build an exciting career from the ground floor with Zeus Media Network. Zeus Media Network, offering the fastest growing social internet platforms in the marketplace, is seeking qualified candidates for local, regional, and national sales positions. The ideal candidate will be a personable, self-starting individual with a passion for helping companies grow. Top performers representing Zeus Media Network are rewarded with a generous, competitive commission structure and unlimited potential. If you possess the fire to succeed at sales and want to work with a company on the cutting edge of technology, then email your resume and contact information to carol@zeusmedianetwork.com. Once again, email your resume and contact info to carol@zeusmedianetwork.com. Zeus Media Network. Hear it. See it. Click it.
Grab your coffee mug and hear Women Talk Fridays at 10 a.m. Join licensed professional counselor Miss Hicks and friends as they discuss real issues with real people. Find us on Facebook and post your questions and comments to Psych every Friday. Remember to tune into Psych Radio Show every Friday at 10 a.m. and bring a friend. Call 646-652-2071 or listen to www.hearwomentalk.com. Got an issue? Let's talk about it Fridays at 10 a.m.
Hi, this is Michelle with Labellamy Vineyard. You're listening to Hear Women Talk Radio on the Zeus Radio Network.
Welcome back to Time's Up with the Jane Wayne of Justice, Susan Murphy Milano.
It's like I've been watching all your pictures fade to gray. I turn each one face down. I stop seeing.
We are back on the battlefield with Dr. David Clark. He has a great website. It's drdavidclark.com. And it's very interesting about how he does alcohol and drug evaluation, alcohol and drug treatments evaluation. He's got trainings, and so people need to go visit his site. Then also Sandra Brown, the easiest site to visit her at is SafeRelationshipsMagazine.com. She's also the author of How to Spot a Dangerous Man. And we were talking at the break about, you know, the importance of, you know, really getting out there and doing a different kind of training, which for some reason Sandra was allowed to do and provide. And that's what piqued your interest because it's, you know, it's a Southern good old boy network as far as I'm concerned, and it, and to have her there shows me that they're willing to be open to changes.
Maybe not again, but I got in there once.
Did they know what they were getting into?
Well, it may be that what you did, though, got us thinking in terms of maybe this is something that we do need to address. There's a similar issue with the alcohol and drug, because the folks who are a part of doing family violence intervention classes are not all trained in the alcohol and drug world. And so the people who would be doing some type of evaluation to determine what the issues will be would miss the alcohol and drug issue.
Can I ask you, Dr. Clark, let's say a child grows up in a very violent home, very abusive. There's a lot of alcoholism on the offender's side, who happens to be a female, because not every case is gender-specific where it's a woman. And I call it intimate partner violence, because to me, domestic violence denotes a broom and a housekeeper kind of image, and that's not what this is. The children that grow up in these homes, if you're able to catch that earlier, or do you think that there's a correlation between somebody that drinks and that's the reason, or is it a combination of the abuse and the alcohol, and that when the children see that they grow up to do the to repeat their behavior?
Well, we do try to make the point in our classes. We do at least two of the 24 weeks that we have, we do cover alcohol and drug issues, and we always ask the question, do you think that the alcohol causes domestic violence?
What's their answer?
And then many of them will say yes.
Oh, what do you think?
We make the point that it is a contributing factor. If it caused it, then everybody who drank would be violent.
Okay.
And so we make the point that it's a contributing factor, and we do teach that that they need to be cognizant of, you know, how this is affecting them and their children.
How can you teach somebody that's been so toxic?
So what? So toxic?
Toxic. Do they hear you?
That's part of what we're discussing today. That is not really going to be addressed if you've got somebody who is, you know, truly toxic. You want to call it intimate terrorism. We're very limited in what we can do with that type of person.
Sandra, weigh in, please.
Well, I think the issue is, from state to state, what we're seeing is that how DV intervention and other services that reach batterers varies so much from state to state. There is no consistency. In some states, and this may be true in Georgia, I forget, is that the people who are providing batter intervention sometimes are not even clinical people. So they are the least likely to even recognize if this is one of the most dangerous abusers, one of the ones that is likely to kill. I mean, these are the guys that fly under the radar with the most trained. I've missed them in my career. And then we're allowing people, non-clinical people, to be offering batter intervention services when they will not even be able to detect, you know, if there is, you know, a psychopath in there or a narcissist or someone whose treatment outcome is going to be low. So if from state to state, we have these huge, big, varying issues about how batter services are being provided and by whom.
And there's a lot of money there being kind of, you know, confettied out to people. Dr. Clark, do batter intervention programs, are they successful? Because I have not seen a one.
Well, when you say successful, obviously that's a nebulous word. But the way I think of it is that what I am doing is exposing people to new ways of thinking. Most of our folks have never even considered that you can have an egalitarian relationship between a male and a female.
Sir, they're, in my opinion, I just don't feel that once somebody is that way, they're not going to change, because a lot of times from what I've seen is that what they do, the offender, is that he wants to, he'll change his behavior up just for a little bit knowing that he can get her back. Or woo her back into his life. He has.
Well, do you see the same people coming back more than once into a batter intervention class or an anger management class that they're mandated to go to?
Yeah, not a lot. They do. They obviously do come back. But I've been doing this since '97, and I do not see a lot of what I guess the technical word would be recidivism.
That's because they've moved and they're not in the same area anymore.
Or or they have figured out the system.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they become more controlling. But the biggest problem that I hear and what we're discussing today is how do you deal with, you know, these extreme, if you want to call it intimate terrorism, patriarchal terrorism, and couples that are arguing and push each other, but you do not end up with the situation where somebody's going to kill somebody.
That you know of.
That I know of. And I can give you an illustration that's very embarrassing. This guy who was in my class, and he did the 24 domestic violence intervention classes, and he did 17 level one groups. And once he quit drinking, he thought that his wife would take him back and they would get back together. And she kept saying, you know, we're not going to get back together. And he came and in front of his two daughters, shot and killed her and then shot and killed himself. So
why was that embarrassing?
It's embarrassing because I was the one doing the classes, and I'm sitting there thinking, you know, I didn't see this. In my opinion, he seemed to be faring as well as anybody in the class.
But does this go towards a lot what Sandra teaches, that they cover this up so well that you do miss it? Even a professional misses it.
It is prior to any of these batterer services, is that we now know what a lot of, you know, who does this. We know the disorders that are associated with this. We know what the lethality factors are, and that they are elevated when people have certain mental health and addiction combinations.
Right.
And so what are we doing to pre-screen so we know who's sitting in that class? You show me, you know, certain combinations of mental health and addiction, and I can tell you what we need to be looking for, you know, over the long haul. So what's Georgia doing in terms of any of the pre-testing to know who is in that chair?
Well, it's not being done, and that's where I'm agreeing with you that this is an issue that absolutely needs to be addressed. The classes are set up to some extent, you know, talk about ways of relating that do not include control and things like that. But when you start talking about somebody who is willing to kill the other person and then kill themselves, you know, we absolutely are not prepared to deal with that.
But they might already be in your chair, right, in your group, and you don't know. So the state of Georgia doesn't have in place any sort of mandated pre- and post-testing or who is not appropriate for group.
But doesn't that hurt? Doesn't that hurt when there is a custody battle going on in a court case and that comes into play, and because people may not be trained, that it would hurt the situation in the case that people are taking liberties in the courts across the country as far as custody and using this as a crutch, I think. How do we get around the court system and the custody for either party, the mediators, who, to me, have no business deciding anything? And then the judge, when he does the ordering of the psychological evaluations, that the same party, that's a recidivism right there, the same party who does those evaluations is a friend of the courts. I'm not saying that there's any improprieties there, but it's like the judges and the people in those courts use the same people to do the same testing, to do the same, to line their pockets, and their behavior, their decisions are frankly abusive. How do we get away from and look at the model across the country, not in the state of Georgia, where we have to stop the one-sidedness, the imbalance, the finger-pointing, the tormenting, because the bottom line is the kids. How would we affect a change there?
I don't know. One of the biggest issues to me on the surface would be the fact of money. In other words, these guys don't have $500,000 if the judge orders a psychiatric evaluation of any.
In cases I've seen, they go ahead and get it from mama. They go ahead and do whatever they have to do because they're going to now take their aggression and their tactics so that the court can't see.
Well, it really comes down to either you put the money in the front of the process, you know, that people get evaluated in the beginning, or it ends up getting, you know, tagged somewhere.
Why do they have to be evaluated at all? Why the law is such years ago, where it was put in place to, you know, divide assets and have a successful outcome with the children, and people move on with their lives. I'm seeing at record rates these guys kill. I'm seeing at record rates when it comes down to money, when they don't get their way. I see other things. But I also see the legal system and the mental health professionals, a lot of them across the country, they seem to be playing into this and just stacking the deck against everything that's supposed to be good and right and fair. How do we get past that?
I think there's got to be some consistency from state to state about what happens in domestic violence. You know, mm-hmm. not only through the law enforcement process, but what happens after that with these batterers.
So let's break down that system.
If the state took the responsibility to, if the guys got charged with a DV and the state took the responsibility to psych test them, then it's done.
Right.
You know, then we are able to provide those results to the people who will be providing services.
We have to go to break, everybody. We'll be right back. We're with Sandra Brown and Dr. David Clark. Stay with us.
It's like I've been watching all your pictures fade to green. I took each one face down till I stopped seeing you.
I'm Jan Hargrave, author, consultant, and body language expert, otherwise known as the Raging Cajun. As an expert in nonverbal communication, I know how important it is and how it empowers you once you understand it. Hear Women Talk is all about empowering women through groups, blogs, videos, and important radio shows like this one. Let's change the world together, one woman at a time, by inviting a friend to join us at www.hearwomentalk.com. Part of the Zeus Radio Network.
Tonight, take an adventure on the Myrtle Beach Ghost Walk. Explore the haunted swamps where alligators and the ghosts from long ago still reside. Stroll across floating walkways beneath the Spanish moss as your pirate guide leads you by lantern and shares 13 spooky tales along the way. The Ghost Walk departs nightly at dusk, only at Barefoot Landing in North Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Call 843-361-2700 or visit MyrtleBeachGhostWalk.com for advance tickets. Myrtle Beach Ghost Walk.
Hands down, it's North Myrtle Beach's favorite new place to be. Boom Boom's Raw Bar on 13th Avenue North in North Myrtle Beach, right on the Marina and Waterway by Doc Holliday's. The best food on the Grand Strand with great low country cuisine and something special going on every night of the week, like Monday Night Football Bingo, Tuesday Cornhole Tournament with a Jose Mexican Feast, Thursday Night Oyster Roast with Donnie Trexler, and Friday Night with DJ Ray Scott live at 5 o'clock. On Saturdays and Sundays, the best bands of the Carolinas come to town live with the Boondocks. Check out the full menu and schedule at BoomBoom'sRawBar.com.
Hi, this is Jessica Dorvaj, host of the Where Is My Guru show, and you are listening to Hear Women Talk Radio.
Blazing the trail, the Jane Wayne of justice is circling the courthouses of America, speaking up for those who have been silenced. Susan Murphy Milano declares, time's up. And now, back to Susan Murphy Milano, because there's never too much Susan Murphy Milano.
Everybody, we are live back here in Myrtle Beach from the Zeus Radio Network, where we are every week talking about topics that no one will really touch across the country and really delving into them for more than 5 seconds. We have been talking with Dr. David Clark of the Atlanta Intervention Network and Sandra Brown, SafeRelationshipsMagazine.com, and she's also the author of Women Who Love Psychopaths. But we're also joined, who I brought in, someone who had contacted me, or whose mother had contacted me over the week, this past weekend. She is married. We're going to call her Jennifer. Jennifer's married to a licensed family therapist in the state of California. She has a couple of kids, and she has been through hell and back, from a teeter-totter abuser to a system that will not allow certain things into her case, the abuse, his mental health, Jennifer, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
You know, your case is not unique, and you and I spoke about that. And I thought it would be interesting because, you know a lot about your abuser, and who happens to be licensed as a family therapist, who happens to have kind of corralled that whole town that you're in. And no one believes his behavior or his actions, do they?
No. He's got everybody totally just thinking he's somebody different than who he really is.
Describe him a little bit, please. Describe him. You know, you guys met, you fell in love, you married, and you pretty much pushed him, supported him to become a licensed therapist, didn't you?
Yes, yeah, he was an intern when we got married, so I encouraged him to continue to get his license, and which he did while we were married. We had a number of other businesses together as well that I actually created and managed from home while raising our two children.
When did the breakdown start to happen in the relationship where it became, where you were starting to be fearful?
It really started to break down really from the beginning. First, you know, he made me out to be crazy. I was the one that was wrong and crazy in my head. So he made me thought. And when I started realizing that I wasn't the crazy one, that's when and started standing up to him, that's when it really started going badly, because no one's ever stood up to him in his whole life. He's a really big guy, and he's
big guy. You mean in height and weight, big?
Yeah, he's like 6'6", 350 pounds, and he can manipulate anyone into doing exactly what he wants and when he wants.
And how tall are you?
I'm 5'10", so I'm not tiny.
Okay,
but still smaller.
Okay, and so when you started to go through the divorce courts, how long have you been in the California divorce system?
For 2.5 years.
And now what are you fighting about now that you're divorced? What are you fighting about?
The custody is the main issue that's still on the table that hasn't been decided.
And you've been mandated to do a mental health evaluation, as he has?
Yes, and that was by his urging, my ex-husband's urging. Okay. So he convinced the court that there needed to be psychological evaluation for me and our children, and the court said, well, you have to get one too, and that's what we're in the final processes of. I still have to go and get mine done here very, very soon.
And you're in a new relationship, so that has just enraged him.
Yes.
Even further, and you had a child by this new relationship.
Yes.
That is a no-no. Dr. Clark, in an offender's mind, here's somebody, and I see this quite often, where the person is a lawyer, the person is a licensed therapist or a psychiatrist, and for a mom trying to raise and have a healthy environment, it doesn't matter whether it's in California, Illinois, New York, Georgia, this is the same pattern of behavior and conduct that's going on all over the place. What do we try to say to somebody that comes to us and says, please, how do I get some help? How do I not get, A, killed, and, B, get the system to just be fair?
Well, one of the questions that I would ask is, has he been physically violent?
Yes.
He has. Most people in the older days took the position that it was safer for you not to report the violence. But generally, I would tell somebody you're better off reporting the violence. That doesn't stop a lot of the control and manipulation that you're experiencing, it sounds like, but it does.
I've reported that.
Mm-hmm. You have done that?
I reported that. I have a police file so thick with our local police department of 911 calls and police reports of custody violations, of the abuse, of the break-ins into my residence. And he sends third-party people, his buddies, over to my place to try to break in and kidnap the children. The police have not done anything. The courts will not listen to anything. They won't look at the evidence that I even submit in writing to the court. In fact, I had a pro bono attorney that came on board with me because she was so frustrated when she heard about my case. And just within this last week, she's dropped me because of the craziness.
Sandra,
the entire situation.
Sandra, you're listening to this. What are your thoughts?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, now you're into kind of the high conflict cases, and you know, who is that? I mean, what you've just described is beyond what we were talking about earlier with Dr. Clark, you know, about mm-hmm. the situational abuser. This is not a situational abuser. This is someone, you know, who has psychopathic features. You're dealing mm-hmm. with, you know, psychopathy. Who does that? Who tries to break in? Who tries to kidnap?
But these are the cases that I see every day. And this is my problem, that this is where the system is broken. This is where people have gone deaf. This woman, and we had her do the, and hopefully, we're not saying her name for a reason, but I suspect he might be listening. So the person who is married to her or was married to her needs to go and read up on what an evidentiary abuse affidavit is, because she has documented and also videotaped so that if something happens to her, that you will be arrested. And because an order of protection in this case will do nothing but just enrage him further. But these are the kind of cases that I see every day. The Jennifers of the world come and say, what do I do? And I do the best I can behind closed doors until I have to kind of make it public. This is, to me, Jennifer's case is the normal. What mm-hmm. can we, while she's on the show with us, is there a way to remedy something where we can give her, because now she has no representation. I'm not a lawyer, thank goodness. But a lot of what I've done or tried to do is steps that other folks or the system should be there in place doing. So is there something that we can tell her, because she is married to such a psychopath, such a person who knows the system like a maze.
Who not only knows the system, but also knows the psychology and how to use
right.
it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So what do
it's
we...
It's also using the children. It's not just yeah. about me. Of course, it's about our two minor children. And recently, he's planted a knife on our 10-year-old son, who's had it at school, to try to frame me to look like, during my custody time that my son's with me, that I'm a bad parent, that I've given him that knife.
And you share your child every other week with this bozo, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you have split up custody.
Correct.
Jennifer, are you in the state of California?
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to email to Susan, an attorney that has handled a case exactly like this.
Okay.
Who's got the whole psychopathy thing down to a science. And I'll send the name of that attorney for Susan. She can forward it to you. You know, part of the problem is, you know, getting the appropriate people who understand what that behavior is. You know, that's not just, and I say that, you know, not condescendingly, that's not just domestic violence. I mean, that's, you know, you're dealing with the absolute worst mental health mm-hmm. with a license attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Jennifer, to those people that are listening out there, what would you say to them about your experience? Because you're an educated woman, you're not by any means living in a trailer park, and it should not matter where you live or what your socioeconomic status is. What would you tell people if you knew that somebody that could make a decision from the courts in California would hear your words? What would you like to say to them?
The system needs to be changed.
How?
That's a good question. It needs a big look taken at it, because the attorneys don't seem to. The attorneys, the judges. My judge, for instance, has given everything with our divorce to my ex-husband.
Isn't California an equal state, a community state?
Yes, even with that, he has passed all of our businesses.
Is it because he knows, though, him? Is that why he is familiar with your husband? Is that why?
I probably so, because my husband grew up here. He's 52 years old, and he knows everyone, and he intimidates and manipulates everyone who will just give him what he wants so that he gets off their back.
So that maybe there should have been a new county involved as far as filing for this divorce, that he has favoritism there because everybody knows him.
Mm-hmm.
What about
I
the
just,
possibility
not
of notifying the licensing board?
Go ahead, doctor. I'm sorry.
I was just wondering about the possibility of notifying the licensing board, the ethics board, for the folks that license him.
Jennifer, you've been too scared to do that.
I notified them when he wasn't paying his child support, and I know that they were threatening to take his license away, but he somehow has gotten it that he's still practicing. So,
does he have a lawyer representing him in this matter?
Oh, yes. He's in debt about $60,000 on this attorney just to try to keep him out of anything.
Well, I think maybe that, you know, in the next couple of weeks, I think we give him a little Christmas present with the board there of his licensing. I think that we put together some paperwork, and maybe I facilitate that so that it doesn't come from you, because that will just enrage him more. There's something, the reason that Jennifer is on to is because I know there is something about this individual, this particular offender, who has a sense of urgency to me. He, at some point, has contemplated, or to me, in my opinion, he's going to wind up killing Jennifer and the kids because he's so angry. So I'm, no matter what action we take at this point, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. And that's why we had, Delilah, we had Jennifer do the evidentiary abuse affidavit and documentation and the video, because so the people knew what they were up against. If we remember a few weeks ago back in California, the man who was supposed to create custody issues, he went into a beauty salon, shot 8 people, and then went out to the parking lot, shot another one, and his antidepressant drugs, apparently he hadn't taken them for a couple of days, so that Monday when he was brought in for the hearing.
Situations like this just go so far beyond anger management. And when you have the court system, when you have the court system here saying, okay, you've been bad. You go over here. You're in timeout. You take this anger management case, and then, you know, we'll cut down the charges. We'll drop the charges, and you're going to be okay, and everything's going to be fine. And that's the crap that's going on.
Let's come back and answer that. We have to go to break, everybody. We're with Sandra Brown, author of Women Who Love Psychopaths. We're with Dr. David Clark. Stay with us, everybody. We'll be right back.
Your pictures fade to gray. I took each one face down. I stop seeing you that way. And I look around and you're not there. I love that you're gone.
Social media is all about the buzz, and now is your chance to build an exciting career from the ground floor with Zeus Media Network. Zeus Media Network, offering the fastest growing social internet platforms in the marketplace, is seeking qualified candidates for local, regional, and national sales positions. The ideal candidate will be a personable, self-starting individual with a passion for helping companies grow. Top performers representing Zeus Media Network are rewarded with a generous, competitive commission structure and unlimited potential. If you possess the fire to succeed at sales and want to work with a company on the cutting edge of technology, then email your resume and contact information to carol@zeusmedianetwork.com. Once again, email your resume and contact info to carol@zeusmedianetwork.com. Zeus Media Network. Hear it. See it. Click it.
In the blockbuster Millennium series books and movies by Stieg Larsson, the main character Lisbeth Salander is both victim and deliverer of justice to a human trafficker. Tune in with Dottie every Thursday at 1 p.m. Eastern and play with fire, kick the hornet's nest, and maybe even get a tattoo of a dragon on traffic. Safe for victims, hostile to traffickers. Listen, chat, call, save lives. That's Traffic every Thursday at 1 p.m. Eastern on Hear Women Talk Radio.
Hi, my name is Jesse Jordan with Further Faster Initiatives, and you're listening to Hear Women Talk Radio.
Susan Murphy Milano, time's up. As Susan proves, there's more to her reputation than a keen mind and a sweet stack of subpoenas. And now, much more Susan Murphy Milano.
We are back with Dr. David Clark, and his website is www.drdavidclark, like how it sounds, clark.com. We're also with Sandra Brown. She has been on the show many times. We usually have sound effects, though, Dustin, you know, because we usually are talking about Viagra and abuse, and maybe there's some kind of a characteristic that happens before or afterwards. She's the author of How to Spot a Dangerous Man. She's the head of the Institute for Relational Harm Reduction and Public Pathology Education, and she's also the creator of the site SafeRelationshipsMagazine.com. And before break, Delilah, we were talking about the individual who shot up the beauty salon, his behavior, his mental health statement in California, status in California that Monday was the fact that he wasn't on any antipsychotic medications, but yet the son of a bitch was able to reload twice. He had body armor on.
Yeah, I mean, where do you draw the line between someone who's definitely mentally ill and someone who really knows what they're doing and they know it's wrong?
And that goes to all of this. Every single one of these cases, they know when they take...
We'll never know unless there's some testing. You know, we could have just as easily sent that disordered person, you know, to, you know, anger management or better intervention.
Let me ask you this, Sandra. At what point do you feel this testing should be done? Where does this come in the big picture?
And then can we tag them on the ear like they do animals afterwards?
That's my point.
Charlie Manson marked himself between his eyes. Yeah. I mean, if it's good enough for Charlie, I think it's good enough for anybody. I would say, you know, if there's been, if he's getting funneled into some type of better intervention services, we need more information about him, because the risk remains that many women are waiting for him to get treatment in order to come back home. They have no idea he's got a condition.
Are they really waiting for him to get treatment, or are they waiting for him to be out of their life?
Right. She has all the reason to hope and none of the reason to be fearful. I mean, he's been sent by an agency, you know, into treatment. And, you know, in many states, those agencies are, you know, going through the task force of that state. So she thinks this is, you know, effective treatment. And just like in medicine and mental health, we are not effective in treating everything.
Why don't we treat this issue first and foremost? You know, this is my big beef here, is we don't treat it as a crime.
Well, see, this is my point, is where in the whole cycle of all of this
is the crime?
He has already committed a crime before he can be eligible to go into treatment or be evaluated or be in anger management. So he's already committed a crime, or she. Where do we come in before this, as far as the prevention of the crime itself?
Or they want to know, like in the California case, what his mindset was before. She tried to say he was going to kill me. She tried to let everybody know. And we always see in the media after the tragedies where they say, we're going to investigate this further. They do more after the death than they did before.
Right.
And that's
right.
My point. And that maybe I should shout it from the mountaintops that firsthand experience in these cases, we want to know what happens. And if many of them are similar to my own father, he audiotaped the murder of my mother before he then killed himself. He told her why she was bad. He told her, I told you so. He told her that he was going to kill her, and that this was her punishment for not behaving. And then his behavior afterwards, until sometime later when he takes his own life. But he's telling her, in all of these cases, they want to watch the breath come out of their victim or their property, their life. And Sarah, for you, there's a reality there that this person, because he's on the edge of snapping, you're coming up to another holiday where he's not with you, where you now have a new addition to your family, including a new relationship. He's going to teach you a lesson at some point. Is that how you have felt?
Definitely. I mean, I'm afraid for my life every time I exchange the children, because I don't have family that live here. All of our mutual friends have sided with him because of what stories he's made up or what have you, and or just have gotten away from both of us altogether from all the nonsense he's created. I'm afraid he's going to kill me every time I go to try to get my children back.
And sadly, the example of Jack and Duncan Lichtenberg, who Amy was forced to turn over visitation to a very manipulative and psychotic individual, on the one visitation that the mother doesn't want to turn the children over to, and the officer says, you have to, otherwise I will arrest you, that mm-hmm. the two children, Jack and Duncan, are murdered, Connolly, by their father, who then takes his own life. And we're also seeing more of this, so...
Well, that's the point, that if there... There's a couple... Delilah was asking about, you know, where do you intervene on this? You know, if there has not been domestic violence, but they're going through a divorce and it turns into high conflict cases, and they use that word now, and it's a code word for one of them is pathologically disordered, because most normal people just want to get through court and get on with their lives. Who does that? And so there's an intervention point at high conflict that both parties get tested, or there's an opportunity to test if he ends up going through batter intervention services. But in those cases, to have that person's mental health, you know, diagnosis and or addiction is to incorporate that into the lethality risk. That, I mean, is there anybody that murders that doesn't have, you know, narcissism, antisocial, sociopath, psychopathy? Probably very few of them. And so, like what Dr. Clark was talking about in the state of Georgia, where they don't look at mental health in the DV dynamics, they look at it as patriarchal. I mean, if that was a medical model, we would say, you know, poor white count cell has nothing to do with cancer. Mental health has nothing to do with domestic violence. That's ridiculous. So I think there are places for intervention, either during a high conflict case or in, you know, batter services.
Dr. Clark, what are your thoughts?
Well, the most obvious issue, if we're going to continue what we're doing in the state of Georgia, that I think we do need to address, you know, is there a way to separate out this extreme personality, the psychopath, that we have, you know, that definitely needs to be addressed. I do think that the vast majority of our folks are, you know, I don't want to minimize violence at all, and I tell my guys, you know, there is nothing that she can do that gives you the right to hit her. But on the other hand, that's still different from what most of what we're talking about today, and how to identify these guys and address that issue. In a model that is mostly, you know, that we're not allowed to do that. We've got to come up with a way to address that.
Well, even, for instance, if a state did, if they didn't test on first offenses on domestic violence, I disagree, but I think they should, mental health testing. But even if they went on second offense, you know, some of the studies on domestic violence show the more times they repeat, the higher the level of percentage chance is of having permanent pathology. So somewhere we've got to be factoring in mental health.
I also think that the churches play a big role. You know, Pastor Neil Shorey out of Illinois, I think that's, Delilah, who we need to hook up Dr. Clark with for a program, because I think the churches are also a place for prevention, for a solution for a lot of the victims.
Well, you know, the thing of it is that there are so many different entities out there. You know, you've got the mental health, the court system, system after system after system. If somehow or another all of this doesn't come together to solve this problem, it'll never be solved, because we're going to sit here on the radio and we're going to talk about it until the cows come home and there's bodies everywhere. I mean, it's time to somehow, some way, get this all together and get it solved.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, to me, one of the things we've got to do is correct the lack of egalitarian relationships and the United States, so that this is perceived to be a problem when you have someone who is so controlling.
But you know,
you
we deal with drunk driving,
else.
Sir. We don't allow you to get in your car and put in the keys if you've had too much to drink and you're arrested and taken down. We the seriousness of this issue is like a pimple on an elephant's derriere. I mean, there's no consequence to most of these cases, as Sarah will tell you and Jennifer will tell you and Abby will tell you and who. They all have different names across the country. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Their voices are being silenced by the fact that systemically the system just doesn't work. Jennifer, let's say that they are listening right now to you in the state of California, because I'm going to make sure that the courts get this. What do you want them to understand that they are doing or could do if they don't start assisting you and your family?
They need to see this for what it really is and protect my children, protect me, and stop the nonsense and stop this man.
You might not make it out of here
in
this whole
and
situation because
it needs to stop and stop on a good note instead of where it's going, which is going to be probably with me and my children not being alive anymore.
What do you want to say to your kids in case something doesn't happen to you? This is your opportunity.
Say to whom?
Your children, in case something does happen to you.
Oh, that I just love them more than anything in the world and never wanted anything like this for them. And I just feel so bad for the situation that they're in and they're being pulled into. And the abuse that their father continues upon them.
We're out of time, everybody.
I'm trying my best to make it go away, but I don't know how to do that.
We're going to try to do everything that we can, and that's what we're going to try to do. And we're going to send the judge and some other people out there this half of this broadcast so that they listen and they understand what they're doing. We have been joined by the hour with Dr. David Clark. He's with the Atlanta Intervention Network, and Sandra Brown, author of Women Who Love Psychopaths. And check her out at saferelationships.com. SafeRelationshipsMagazine.com and DrDavidClark.com. For Delilah, myself, and everybody here at the Zeus Radio Network, you know, please, everybody, be safe. If you're in a situation and you don't know you're going through a divorce and you're just not sure, please go and pick up a copy of Time's Up. Go to SusanMurphyMilano.com. For everybody here at the Zeus Radio Network station in Myrtle Beach and my lovely producer, everybody, God bless. Stay safe until next week.
Feel better all on my own. I love that you're good.